Now it's time for our monthly check-in on some of the most interesting science news. At-home genetic testing has grown in popularity over the years as people want to learn more about their history, but its high-profile use by police in California to catch the alleged Golden State Killer has some people asking how much access law enforcement has to our genetic information. Anna Groves is an assistant editor for Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. Anna, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with this genetic testing and the Golden State Killer story. This was big in the news for a while. So these home genetic testing kits help police find a suspect, is that right?
Right. So police were able to take DNA evidence from this unsolved serial killer case and match it to some of these repositories of these at-home DNA kits, and they found the killer that way.
And this isn't the only time they've done this, right? It may be that police will use this data from these home genetic testing kits to try to solve other unsolved crimes.
Yeah, I think they're going to be using it more and more. Just in the news today, I saw a man also in California was arrested last Thursday on some cold case rape cases. They used the DNA data in the exact same way as with the Golden State Killer, and they were actually able to narrow down their suspects to both this man, Kevin Conther, and his twin brother, of course, because identical twins have the same DNA, and it wasn't until taking them both into custody that they were able to narrow it down to Kevin.
And as you were touching on, this is a little weird because it doesn't have to be the person in question who had gotten one of these home testing kits. It could be people related to them, and that can be used to narrow it down to a particular group of people or individual in this case.
Right, because people share so much DNA with their close relatives. So the closer you are to somebody, relative-wise, the more DNA you have in common.
And this raises some ethical concerns. This was in a recent issue of Discover Magazine where people are thinking, okay, this is between me and the testing company and that's it. It's not clear what's going to happen with our genetic data when it's collected.
Right. The more these things are in the news, the more people are calling for more transparency. And of course, these companies will say that this sort of information was always in their privacy policy or their terms of use. But I think this is making people more and more aware of like how their genetic data is actually going to be used and shared with authorities or whoever else.
So we'll be watching to see how that develops. I want to check out a couple stories now that you've written about on your blog at Discover Magazine. Now, people might have seen this in stores, Royal Jelly Supplements. Well, what is Royal Jelly, first of all, before we dig into the story?
Yeah, so royal jelly is something that honeybees make. So this is a substance that is made in the hive, and it's what they apply to a bee larva to turn it into a queen bee. So normally when all the bee larvae are born, they're all genetically the same. There's nothing special about the queen bee. But then when they pick out one of the larvae, they feed it this substance, and that's what makes a queen.
And it turns out that royal jelly does something for mammal stem cells, mice, and maybe for humans. What the heck?
Yeah, this is really wild. So researchers at Stanford were curious in royal jelly because it has been sort of advertised for many years as like a supplement for humans to take. So they were like, well, what the heck? Why is there this connection for humans? Is this all just crackpot claims? But they thought, well, if anything, it's probably going to have an effect on stem cells because of what they knew about how it worked in the beehive. So they tested it out on some embryonic stem cells from mice to see what it would do. And amazingly, it had this crazy effect on them where it kept the stem cells as stem cells. So I got to explain this for a second. So it's normally a stem cell is just sort of a base cell that could turn into any number of types of cell in the body. So like a stem cell might turn into a bone cell or a muscle cell or anything in the body. But to have this chemical that can keep it as a stem cell, that means that as the cells are dividing and multiplying, it means you get more and more stem cells, which is a really big deal, even just from a scientific perspective. So they're thinking now that the reason why royal jelly has an impact on people could be because it has this interaction with the stem cells. Now, did that make any sense?
Yeah, and it's still a little mysterious. Like, we shouldn't all go out popping royal jelly pills because it's not clear what it does, and it's expensive. But the weird thing to me you wrote about is it all comes down to this one protein. It's in the bee, in the royal jelly from the bees, and it happens to fit this lock. It's like a key and a lock in stem cells. What?
Yeah, so the reason why the bee compound from the royal jelly, it's called royalactin, the reason why that has any effect on the mouse cells or human cells at all is because it has the exact same shape as a protein that's in mammals. So not only did the researchers find this crazy effect on stem cells, but then they went and used the shape of the bee protein to go find the right human protein analog. So they essentially discovered a new protein in humans that's sort of a mirror image of the royal jelly protein.
All right, I want to check out one more story in the health world before we let you go. The irritable bowel syndrome, inflammatory bowel disease. A lot of people are diagnosed with these. To an extent, they're sort of shrug, you feel bad, and we're not entirely clear why diagnosis a lot of the time. Yeah. There's some research looking at the bacteria in our guts to try to identify these, maybe to help cure them. What are we finding out?
Yeah, so this group out of the Netherlands did this really cool research sequencing the gut microbiome. So they identified all sorts of different bacteria that live in the guts of healthy people and people with IBS and people with IBD. And they wanted to see how they were the same and how they were different. And they found not only significant differences between what bacteria were living in the guts of people with IBS and IBD compared to healthy people, but also there are enough differences between the IBS patients and the IBD patients that they're hopeful that they can use this technology for diagnosis in the future.
Right. So you could maybe diagnose people without a colonoscopy, which sounds like a great development.
Yes. Everyone is thrilled. Yeah.
And then a question that pops to my mind is, all right, do people with IBS or IBD have different bacteria because those bacteria are causing their problems? Or is this like a symptom? Is this a consequence of some underlying cause that's causing IBD or IBS? Do we know that?
That's the million-dollar question. We do not know that yet, but this is a huge step in finding that out.
And briefly, how does one do a massive census of people's gut biomes?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Maybe I'm not, but it takes a lot of poop. Am I allowed to say poop on
the
air?
You can say this, yes, especially for a scientific purpose.
So, yes, it was very scientific. So they had this big database in the Netherlands of like thousands of people that they had a bunch of medical information on already. So they already knew who had IBS, who had IBD, and so on. So they asked all of those people to give them fecal samples, which essentially they had to collect at home. I'll let you use your imagination to think of how they did that. But then they had to keep the samples in their freezers, their home freezers, because the samples couldn't be sitting out at room temperature. It would mess up the bacterial communities because some would grow and things like that. So then the researchers had to just drive around the Netherlands picking up people's frozen poop samples.
The glories of scientific research. Anna, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Anna Groves, assistant editor at Discover Magazine, bringing us up to date on some of the most intriguing stories in the world of science.